Well, hello there. Welcome to Season 11, Episode 25 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday the 28th of August, nearly Christmas, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Alan, and joining me this week are the usual reprobates. Mark, hello Mark.
Hello, hello.
And Martin, hello Martin.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ah yes, well done, getting into character for the Christmas play that we'll be putting on at the end of the season, no doubt.
Already learning my lines.
Good, good, good. What have you been up to, Mark?
I have been upgrading my Steambox.
Ooh, what have you been doing to it?
It finally told me that I could upgrade to Ubuntu 18.04 this week. So I thought I might do that.
Oh, you run a traditional desktop with Steam on top, right?
It's basically Zubuntu with Kodi and Steam installed, yes.
Can I ask, no strings attached, why Zubuntu and not another popular flavour of Ubuntu?
Basically, I wanted something. Well, I don't really use the desktop except when I'm doing very basic admin stuff. So I just wanted something with a very simple desktop.
I think what you're saying is you hate Ubuntu Mate. Those are the words you're struggling to find.
Okay, I couldn't possibly comment, but if you want to take that from what I'm saying, then that's in your hands.
You heard it here first. Mark hates Ubuntu Mate.
Even though I went to great lengths to create an app in Ubuntu Mate to explicitly address the needs of Mark. In any case, how did the upgrade go? Was it seamless or did you encounter any problems? Because it's kind of a homebrew 16.04, yes. Isn't it?
Yeah, it went reasonably well. The couple of problems I had to do with PPAs. So I have Kodi installed from a PPA and a bunch of other things. And also I had the NVIDIA drivers, the latest ones, installed from the graphics drivers PPA. So I'm aware that PPAs get disabled while it does the upgrade. So the first thing I did once the upgrade was finished was re-enable the PPAs and do another dist upgrade so that I would have thought that then that would make everything work. But what had actually happened was Kodi had got uninstalled somehow in that process. So it turned out I had to reinstall Kodi and then it was all okay. And the graphics drivers, I think the package name had changed. So yes. After I rebooted, I actually didn't have... it told me that I had a VMware GPU driver or something very strange, which I didn't fully understand. But basically, I had no hardware acceleration.
This is the pitfall with using PPAs, really, isn't it?
Yes, upgrades. It is. Yeah, if only there was a more modern way of these sorts of things.
Yeah, but you're now up and running, yes?
I'm now up and running, yeah. Once I just found the right package name and installed the drivers, rebooted, and all Steam and everything still working, no problem.
Sweet.
So to address the NVIDIA drivers, because that's why you had that PPA on there,
the
correct way, if I can be so bold, to address that is with the point releases on the LTSs from 0.2 onwards, you get hardware enablement, kernels and graphics stack updates. So instead of just lumping the NVIDIA drivers on top of, you know, your base install, you can actually, if we'll put a link in the show notes, I'll remember to do that this week, enable the hardware enablement stack, which gives you a managed upgrade path through the life cycle of that LTS and on to the next LTS whilst keeping all of your drivers up to date.
Ah, okay, including the proprietary NVIDIA ones.
Yes, exactly so.
Clever.
Well, with all that, we don't have time to discuss what you've been doing, Martin. We'll save that for next week. Let's get on with the rest of the show. And first up in the news, Mark, what's been going on?
Valve have released Proton. No, it's not a physics experiment. This is a version of Wine that's been built into Steam to allow users to run Windows games on Linux.
This was big news. I've seen a lot of people reporting on this and also reporting that this is the end of Linux as well as the beginning of Linux.
The end of Linux stories. I'll be interested to hear what you've seen on those.
Well, people have been reporting that this means nobody will write native games for Linux because basically it means that
developers can be lazy and just put their applications in the store for Windows and then forget all about Linux, and they don't need to make Linux ports because there's this magic button they can press in Steam that will mean Steam have responsibility for making sure that game works on Linux, and therefore the developer doesn't need to. So it's the end of Linux, basically.
Can I just, you know, pull back the curtain and reveal a truth to end users here? Developers are lazy.
No way.
Yeah, it's true. If you want developers to, like, you know, support a platform, you need to make it as friction-free and as light touch and as easy as possible. And that's what Valve have been investing an awful lot of effort in for the last 2 years.
So what exactly is Proton?
So it as I understand it, well, it's Wine with some new bits which Valve have been developing, like there's been a project that's been doing the rounds called DXVK, which is a DirectX to Vulkan translation layer for Wine, and they've been developing that. And they have also made it so that it works with all of the Steam APIs, so you have the whole Steam overlay and everything hooks in, and the Steam controller stuff all works. And the way it's presented in Steam itself is basically you find a game in the store that's a Windows game, and it says that it's supported via Steam Play, which until now has basically meant you buy it on one platform and you've bought it on all the platforms, whereas now it means that you buy it and you can play it anywhere, kind of.
Right.
So it's also trying to be as transparent to the user as possible. The only way you might tell is if the game says, you know, exit to Windows or something like that.
Right. So have you tried it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go on then.
I've got loads of information about trying it. So the first thing I did is I'd bought various like Humble games over the years that were Windows only. So I'd got keys for them that I'd never activated. So route one was go and activate all of those and install them. And I did install and play, in air quotes, a bunch of games I didn't understand what they were, because these were never games that I would have purchased, you know, individually.
Part of a bundle.
Yeah, not the style of game I would play. But as far as I could tell, I put Steam into Wild West mode and was just able to install the Windows versions of those games that I'd activated.
Sorry, when you say Wild West mode, what on earth does that mean?
Speaking within the settings for Steam now, if you opt into the beta for the Linux client of Steam, in Steam Play, you can now tick a couple of checkboxes, which basically enable you to install any Windows-only game on the Linux Steam client.
Right. So they have a predefined list of ones that they know work, and then you're saying, yes, I don't want that list. I want to pick and choose whichever game I want and see if it works.
Yeah, because I didn't have any of the games on the supported list already in my library. So I went straight to let's go for the most unstable experience possible and see how that works out. And although I didn't understand the games that I'd purchased, or, you know, were part of the bundles that I'd purchased.
Is that because none of them needed a steering wheel?
This is precisely the problem. Right. You know, my steering wheel was not the right controller for those particular games.
Gotcha.
So having figured that out, I thought, well, what I need to do is find some driving games. So I then purchased like the EA Driving Pack, I think it's called, which is a whole bunch of driving games published by EA. And that's predominantly the Need for Speed series. And I bought that because I really wanted Need for Speed. The one with the police cars in it. Undercover or something. Anyway, one of those I really loved on the PlayStation, so I wanted to play that again.
Right.
And it just worked. And I was I was totally blown away by the fact that one just worked. Anyway, and all of those games actually in that bundle of games worked really well for me. But I noticed there was something clever going on, because when I installed the first couple, after part of the install, it says, oh, right, it's obviously like a Wine-style dialog box that says installing DirectX for Windows or something like that. And the first couple of games did that, and I was like, oh, okay. So it's just like scaffolding a standard thing. But the next one I did, it installed Punk Buster and the NVIDIA Physics Library and all of this DirectX stuff. And I've installed other games as I've, you know, expanded my library into the Windows world a little bit, that clearly know, even though these are unsupported games by Steam, they know that there are these additional Windows dependencies and libraries that need to be installed somehow.
But surely those are, that's just normal for a Windows. If you install... Well,
is it though?
Yes.
Okay.
If you install Steam on Windows, then install a Windows game as you normally would, then you get these little pop-ups that say, oh, I need this runtime and I need this extra bits and bobs. And it's just servicing that requirement, but through Wine.
Is that how Steam works? Because I've never run Steam on Windows.
This is no different,
right.
Really.
Okay, so
than the experience of running it on Windows. The host OS is just different, and in between you and that game is this magical new Proton layer.
Interesting.
That makes it transparent for you.
So, in my only reference point for doing this is when you and I have made wrappers in Snaps. As it turns out, on all of the same technologies, although we didn't know it at the time, and had to manually prescribe, these are the additional things that need to be installed in order for this game to work. And I didn't realize that the Steam Windows client on Windows proper intuits all of those requirements and installs them.
No, it's not so much that. It's that the game developer knows what's needed.
Yeah, right.
What you were doing is replacing that knowledge that the game developer has, because if you didn't, then you would end up installing a bunch of libraries that don't work in Wine.
Okay.
So, Mark, how did you get on?
I got on quite well some of the time and not at all well the rest of the time. So I had one game which was on the officially supported list, which I tried, which was the Doom 2016 game. And I had that running in Wine before, but when I installed it through Steam, it didn't work.
Yeah. So I purchased that game and installed it, and it didn't work for me either.
Yeah, which is interesting.
I've seen other people report that that game works. So it's, I think Liam from Gaming on Linux did a live stream of it working, yeah. I think.
The other game I tried was Sonic Mania, which I'd had working through Wine before, but using a separate thing to get the Steam controller working. So when I installed that and it ran and it could tell I was using a controller and everything looked right. So that was really cool. And that worked perfectly well. But yeah, so there's a list. If you go on the GitHub page for Proton, there's a wiki page with compatibility reports, which is kind of like the new version of the Wine App DB, where people have basically tried playing various games and reported whether they work or not and how well they work using, there's like a Google spreadsheet behind it all.
Right.
Now, the trouble here that I've noticed is that there's a huge variation between people trying it on different Linux distributions with different graphics cards or different drivers and getting completely different results. So there's games which say they both work completely stable and say they don't run at all for the same game.
Yeah.
So I think this is... Yeah, this is still an opt-in beta at the moment. I think we've got quite a long way to go before we actually get a stable experience.
I think we're also seeing, to some extent, if you dig into some of those reports and look at the versions of the distros and the graphics stacks and the graphics chipsets that sit behind them, you know, there are some people with Intel HD 4000 saying, you know, this ultra-modern Tomb Raider game doesn't work, and it's like, yes, that's because the chip in your computer isn't actually capable of running that game.
Right.
So some of those reports you just have to look at and you go, well, okay, maybe Steam could do a better job of catching the fact that, you know, you simply cannot run that game, and that would be true on Windows as well, you know, not just on Linux.
Yes.
So I tried a driving game.
Go you.
And it's called Jalopy, and it's a Windows game where you fix up an old jalopy car. You actually physically put the engine and the water and the oil and stuff in the car, like physically pour the petrol under the bonnet and stuff. It's quite funny. And then you drive through West Germany or some Eastern European country. I haven't played it a lot because the first time I played it, I ran out of fuel and had to walk to the petrol station. And then I realized I left my wallet in the car. So I had to walk all the way back to the car to get my wallet, which was a bit daft, but it was completely seamless. I just installed that game, even though I had to also enable, as you call it, Wild West mode, installed the game, and it just worked. I had no problem with it at all. I had a couple of others that gave me very low frame rates. I tried No Man's Sky and I got terrible frame rates, so I gave up on that. But Jalopy just worked. So there's a game that I would not have normally played on my laptop, and now I can. So
yeah,
it's fantastic. I think it's great work.
Yeah, for me, it's unlocked a catalogue of the game genre that I love most, which is prolific, you know, for the Windows titles. And it gives me access to games that I love and I've played in the past on consoles, and I can now play again and enjoy. And yeah, for me, I bought, apart from Trackmania Nations Forever, I bought the entire Trackmania series of games as well, which are brilliant and get better as well as you go through them, and they've evolved over time with it. Awesome. just fantastic games.
Something else that's worth pointing out: Gaming on Linux spoke to Valve to check how the stats for Proton are reported to the game developers, and what they do is they look at the platform that you play on the most in the first week after you buy it, and then they report it as a sale on that platform, and Proton is reported as Linux.
Excellent.
So all of those Trackmania Nations Forever game, or Trackmania games, whatever they are, they'll be reported as Linux sales because you've been playing them the most on Linux.
That's pretty groovy, because people often report, or developers often report, that, you know, Linux sales don't amount to much, and people are actually often buying the games on Windows, and it's this like magical algorithm inside Valve that determines what is a Windows sale and what is a Linux sale. It's good to get some clarity.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So it's great. I'd love to hear from our listeners as to what they've tried under Proton and whether they've had some success or not, or whether you're not really interested in this at all and you don't really care whether more non-free software makes it onto the Linux desktop. But let us know at the usual places. We've got a couple of quick news items we can probably burn through as well. Martin, there was another little bit of news.
There was. It was more gaming news, as it happens. Google apparently has filed irresponsible claims about Fortnite and its installer on Android. And there's a little bit of conspiracy on the internet that maybe this is sour grapes.
Mm.
Yes. I think we reported previously that Fortnite's available as an Android APK rather than being available through the Play Store. And this is speculated because they want to skip the 30%, in inverted commas, tax.
Yeah, so it's free to play, isn't it? But it's in-app purchases.
Yeah, in-app purchases don't go through the Google Play Store, so you're not actually giving Google money for the platform. But Tim Sweeney attacked Google's disclosure of a bug in the Fortnite Android installer because Google made it public rather than disclose it to Epic Games and then let Epic Games fix it first.
They actually, it looks like they followed their normal procedure, which is after a patch has been released, they wait 7 days and then they make it public.
Right.
So. But Epic wanted them to wait longer because they didn't think enough people had installed the patch, basically.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's reasonable, isn't it? It's unfortunate.
Anyway, final news. You can now run Windows 95 as an app on Windows, Mac, and Linux via a crazy lunatic Electron application and some JavaScript and a virtual machine. It's all a bit strange.
So is this an x86 emulator in JavaScript?
Yeah, it's libx86.js is responsible for doing all of this. And the peculiar thing is that Alan and I actually know the developer that hammered all of this together. He's somebody we've met a few times over the course of the last 18 months or so. And he did this for fun and lols and kicks and all the rest of it. And inadvertently set the internet on fire. I have seen this story do the rounds absolutely everywhere.
Yeah, it's crazy. And all for just running Windows 95 in a window on your desktop.
I know, a 23-year-old operating system that has no network emulation or anything useful, and everyone's talking about it.
Yeah, coming from the guy who has a bunch of laptops that run Windows 95, I'm not one to talk. So I think we'll move on at that point. And And next up is a bunch of community news. What's up first in the community news, Martin?
In upstream development news, shocker, an Ubuntu developer has contributed to an upstream project.
I don't believe it.
Surely that doesn't happen.
I know. It's not like this happens every day of the working week and often the weekends as well. But apparently this story is the story. Somebody dared to supply some performance improvements to GNOME Shell.
Oh, well, that's good news, isn't it? Was it Dooflu?
Yeah, it's good news.
So this has been in, this is already in 1804, isn't it? But they've now upstreamed it, so it'll be in.
Some of it is. I think some of the patches need to be reworked.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, some of it's been in Ubuntu 1804 for a while because it was easy to slipstream that into a patch into Ubuntu. Then, you know, people have been running it for a while and now it's been upstreamed. And the discussion's happening in the open on GitLab, which is where all the discussion of, you know, these bugs happen. But it's great to see some performance improvements for GNOME Shell because, you know, there's been a lot of discussion over the last few months about performance of GNOME Shell and issues there. So it's good to see whoever fixes those. And, you know, there's multiple contributors to this, not just one person at Canonical. We're making a bit of a joke about it. But, yeah, it's good to see that fixing. What's next, Mark?
The Ubuntu Touch OTA 4 has been released by the UbiPorts team.
Yes.
This is a landmark, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, so this is now based on Ubuntu 16.04, whereas previously on 15.10.
15.04.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Sorry. Yeah. So it's great. It's lovely to see a stable OTA go out from the UbiPorts people.
This is most significant for them. When I was at UbuCon Europe in Spain earlier in the year, Jan Spritz from the Ubuntu Touch project was outlining all of their plans and roadmap for the future. And just about every bullet point on his presentation was suffixed with depends on 1604, depends on 1604. So this is like the jigsaw piece that falls into place that unlocks a whole series of improvements and things that they can now start to unlock and work towards. Things like Anbox support and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, this is pivotal, and it will be really interesting to see how quickly all of these other initiatives fall into place around this release. I haven't had the opportunity to install it yet. Have either of you?
No, I've got my BQE 4.5 and my BQM10 both on charge next to me.
Yeah,
I put them on charge and I'll do them after we finish recording and have a play.
Lovely.
But it's really good to see this because, you know, everyone thought this whole thing was dead. And when the community picked it up and the UbiPorts guys were working hard to get this moving forward, I'm just so pleased to see this. It's really good news. Next up, the Ubuntu Membership Board has a call for nominations. The Membership Board are a group of people in the community who review people who are applying to be Ubuntu members, and Ubuntu members are people who've given a sustained and significant contribution to the project in any way. Doesn't have to be coding development. And the people who do that are called the membership board, who review new members, and some of their terms are expiring soon because they're only on the board for a couple of years and then they expire and they can choose to stand again or not. So Simon Quigley has published on the Ubuntu Fridge a call for nominations. So if you're an Ubuntu member and you're confident you can evaluate contributions to various parts of the community and can be committed to attending membership meetings, which is basically on IRC half an hour every
couple of weeks.
Yeah, every couple of weeks or so. Then maybe you could join the Ubuntu membership board. I would say the A-team, but it's not. It's the membership board. Get your nomination in. We'll put a link to the Fridge article in the show notes. What's next, Martin?
Well, off the back of KDE's ascendancy, just generally right now, they are now announcing that KDE Neon has arrived on the Pinebook.
What's the Pinebook?
A low-cost ARM laptop. I think it's around $90.
Yeah.
And the Pinebook needed a first-class, well-supported, you know, Linux operating system. And I think KDE has snuck in there and fitted that bill rather perfectly. So I'm now tempted to get one of these devices.
Well, it'll be hard because they're actually really difficult to get hold of. You have to, they build them to order at such a low cost. They wait until they've got a certain number of pre-orders in, and then they spin up the manufacturing. So they don't have loads of them in stock. You can't just order them. They're hard to get hold of.
I wonder how quickly their pre-order turnaround is gonna accelerate now. I mean, if you wanted to try out KDE on a device and you don't want to faff about with installing it on an old laptop or finding a spare laptop on eBay, it's pretty impressive that for sort of under $100, you can order a device pre-installed with something that you can tinker with and get familiar with. I think that's really great. And KDE are doing a lot more of this, you know, with OEMs now. It's really great to see.
Also in KDE Neon news, there's now images based on 1804 available for testing.
Yeah, I when I was at Academy, I was chatting to Jonathan Riddell about this and said, you know, how ready are they? How good are these 1804 images? And he said, they're great. They're fantastic. You should use them. And strongly urged me to upgrade from my 1604 base laptop to 1804. But I've a policy of not upgrading while I'm at events because that's just a stupid idea. because I've been bitten with that before. But I will. When I don't need my laptop on a daily basis, I'll upgrade it and test it out. But you can too. You can download the images and do clean installs, or you can upgrade from 1604 to 1804.
Yeah. And Jonathan has been doing, well, he was responsible for Kubuntu for many years before putting KDE Neon together. So he knows how to do LTS to LTS upgrade. So if Jonathan's comfortable that these are ready to use, then if you are a KDE Neon user, it's time to hit the upgrade button and get on board the 1804 Bionic Beaver train.
Yes, if you are one of the many thousands of KDE Neon users.
Yes, the many thousands. Yeah.
Yes. Finally, in community news, Bodhi Linux 5 arrives with Moksha desktop improvements, according to OMG Ubuntu. So Bodhi Linux is a derivative of Ubuntu, which uses something like Enlightenment, but it's not Enlightenment. Is it a fork of Enlightenment?
Yeah.
Right.
Originally, it used to be Enlightenment, but then, I forget the developer's name. How awful. But he basically preferred some of the features of an earlier version of Enlightenment and forked it, and it's called Moksha.
Jeff Hoagland is the developer.
That's the guy. Yes, Jeff. Yes. So this is an Enlightenment fork. And he keeps us up to date with every LTS release, and the new version is out. So if you like some Enlightenment in your life, then Bodhi Linux 5 is out now.
Awesome. That's the end of the community news.
Are you a freedom-hating iTunes user? Redeem yourself by helping spread the word about Ubuntu and open source. Leave a rating to tell others what you think of the Ubuntu podcast.
Oh gosh, that's the end of episode 25. That was exciting, wasn't it?
We whizzed through that. Yeah, that was quick.
Lots of gaming news this week.
Yeah, sorry about that, everyone. If you've got some not gaming news that you want to send us, feel free to send it in, and we'll try and fit it in amongst all the other Steam stuff and GOG and all the other stuff going on. But yeah, next week we're going to discuss our Ogcamp road trip. And I think we've got some command line love, or GUI love, is it?
It's GUI love this time.
GUI love. Yeah. Ooh,
look forward to that.
Yes. It's a really good one, actually. I really like it. So we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.